Welcome to the Practice Podcast, conversations probing the nature of practice. I'm your host, Dave Fearon, co-author with Peter Vail of the digital book on practice as a way of being. Find it at mylibrary.world. And now to our show. Well, I am so relieved, actually, to be back in conversation with Tom Casey. Why relieved? Because every time we've brought ourselves together for this podcast, something major has changed in the world. There's always something changing, but we seem to be able to find the moment when there's some kind of transformation, and that doesn't always mean for the best. It means things are fundamentally shifting as opposed to a little here and a little there. So Tom kind of helps me understand it, helps hopefully you understand what can be understood through the research of Discussion Partners Collaborative.
Perfect.
I got it right. I've known Tom for many years. My head never gets those three words right, but I did it.
I think this is only our 27th podcast.
Something like that. Yeah, the Tom Casey Show. But you're really on top of things. And in fact, you literally are on top of things. Tom is in Peru right now. So he, in order to see the future, he goes way up in the Peruvian mountains and looks out across the horizon. So Tom, welcome. What are you seeing from that?
Well, I think
you know,
the combination of three vantage points, actually maybe four, David. Okay. There's the military term FUBAR that, you know, coming back from World War II. I'm not going to translate it because I know you have a family show.
Quite a few people understand that word.
But the problem is there's a consistency in terms of what we are hearing from our clients overall. This is the partnership, the collaborative advisors and our alliance partners, as well as the clients that I'm hearing about individually. So I'm going to speak as a universe of one with clients in the Americas, Europe, and here in South America, including Peru. Okay.
They're
worried. They're worried because the thing is they have their own host country matters to worry about. Here in Peru, as an example, there is a significant concern over the upcoming election of a new president. Okay. The current president came in after an attempted coup back in a while ago. So everybody's got their problems. But what's happened is, internally and externally, we tended to look at our institutions in the United States for some type of relative calm. And that reassurance, whether we call it checks and balances, whether we call it, you know, institutional memory that guides with guiding principles, et cetera, everything seems to be on the table. And what we're doing within the collaborative discussion partners is we've reduced it to the five E's.
Okay.
Because what's happening is that when we're engaging in discussions with our clients, regardless of location, domestically or internationally, what they're looking at to the U.S. is they're trying to get their arms around our economy. That's one E. Europe, particularly as it relates to the Ukraine, particularly after it relates to this, you know, big hug welcome that Putin got in Alaska.
Yeah.
Okay. And only to you know, have half of Europe statesmen and women, you know, without invitation showing up in Washington with Zelensky within days after.
That was wonderful.
The other issue here is Epstein. Okay, people do not understand it. All right, Trump is in the UK today, okay, and the first, we'll call it government casualty about Epstein with these new generations of files is actually one of their people who had to step away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the other ones.
And he did. I mean, that's the difference. He was shamed, and he, of course, didn't have a lot of choice, but he did. He got out of the picture. And
Yeah.
it's just I
They
wish that would happen twice.
well, they handled it well. Okay, but the other issue here in terms of E number four for us is expectations. Okay. There was an expectation that the situation in Gaza, okay, would have been resolved by now. Okay, we're going into a multi-year war. There's concerns, legitimate concerns about genocide and the Middle East, when we're attacks, whether it's Iran, the Houthi rebels in Yemen, or now Qatar, people are trying to figure out, well, what does this mean and how does this end and how badly will it end? And the
Yeah.
other one, is the employees that are, populating the administration in the US. Okay, I mean, as recently as last week, you saw the FBI director stubbing his toe here in terms of the Charlie Kirk assassination. So what you're getting is how can I run my business, or how can I think about what's the right thing to do for my customers, for my shareholders, for my employees, with this type of confusion hanging over my head? It's
That's
not
right.
only the stock, it's not only the stock market that doesn't like chaos. It's the guy who founded his own business and now has 10 employees. Okay. And we don't look like we're controlling our own destiny here. We look like very reactive. We look in many ways overreacting to events. And the other thing that's the creeping sentiment that I hear is people are running out of patience with the overt hypocrisy.
Well, that
Okay.
was something that came up in one of our podcasts as you did a study about 2 years ago,
Yep.
Tom, maybe, where
Yeah.
you came up with, you synthesized up at least five things that really concerned middle leaders, the ones who were on the rise, and therefore they'd be a little younger than you and I are, and they
Yeah,
would say,
sure.
here are the things that bother us. Number one,
What's it
hypocrisy.
called? It was the research study that led to our most recent book, and the delineation was these are the five behaviors we really just are out of patience with. And it was all close to 2,000 participants. And it was hypocrisy, bias, intolerance, expediency, and aggression, all of which are front and center now.
The five
But the
horsemen of the apocalypse,
Yeah, the hypocrisy one is, I'll give you an example. Zelensky's basically thrown out of the office back in February. Okay, and Putin is welcomed like, complete with the red carpet treatment. Okay, so that's a comparison. The next one would be, and I want to be very clear here that political violence has no place anywhere. And we
Yes.
seem like school violence to be tolerating it. But when you get a principal like Mr. Kirk, who did not deserve to die at all, and certainly not that way, okay, having people declaring war overtly and saying the rhetoric on the left is what caused this, and using the rhetoric on the right to make the point of the le rhetoric on the left.
Oh,
That's
yeah.
coming across. You have a conversation with somebody over coffee who's not a US resident, and they say, "What are you guys thinking? What about those people in Minnesota that the knucklehead that tried to take out two families? That's not even a beep." Okay. And now we have flags at half mast and state funerals and things like that for Mr. Kirk. And I'm not saying he doesn't deserve it. What I'm saying, we deserve better
Yes.
than this polarization, because everybody's paying attention to us, particularly now, particularly with Ukraine, particularly with Gaza, and particularly with the tariffs. So
I'm sorry to interrupt, but it just crossed my mind that when you mentioned that here or there in South America,
right.
interacting with people who are looking at the United States, who always have, one way or another, looked at the United States as something like stability, something like, oh, this is a democracy that's working, so we better make ours work, something like that. But here's what crossed my mind. It's sort of like a teenager who discovers the father that he has adored and revered and always followed is having an affair. And you go, what? And it's like the scales come off, and now you're seeing that the father is, I guess you'd call him human when they confess that someone can't be loyal and to their family. And but from there on, that kid's looking for someone more stable than the father now, maybe. And also, the father's gonna be around for another 50 years for that kid if he lives, and he'll never forget it. And we're doing a lot of cheating in this country right now.
At the risk of being, house husbands of Connecticut or wherever we could take that, wherever we could take that, think about it a little bit differently. Think about Europe, which is one of the EUs we're looking at. Okay. And the thing is, we're no longer perceived to be an ally. We are barely perceived to be a friend. Now, how do you get that back?
It's
Okay.
kind of, yeah.
I mean, so the taking your analogy in a geopolitical direction, we've already broken the trust.
Yes.
Okay. And so the question is, and this is what the biggest audience for the political, geopolitical machinations and institutions, okay, are the CEOs and C-suite executives, who are basically looking for some type of stability from which to make decisions that are extremely important. Right now, given the tariffs, people don't know whether to hire or fire.
Yeah, and you're
Okay.
seeing that now in the numbers, the real
Absolutely.
numbers.
Yeah. And then we throw out the people who are keeping the numbers because we don't like the numbers.
Yeah.
Okay. So, why would we have faith in the next set of numbers? So the thing that the C-suite people are telling us, and frankly the high potentials too, there's the term, David, and we're doing a study that'll come out probably towards the end of year on and we did it a few years ago on American exceptionalism, which is a term that we at Americans had already taken, frankly justifiable pride in, whether it's coming to the aid of allies, helping Europe rebuild it with the Marshall Plan. And you look at this issue here of trying to say, well, are we still exceptional in our own eyes? And the early returns are coming in hell no. I mean, they're still proud of their country. Okay, but when you say, what are you proud of? They tend to gravitate towards college sports or something at this point.
We're
Yeah,
grabbing
so,
it. We grab at entertainment when all else fails.
well, the Emmys. God love Seth Rogen for winning, I've never seen the show, but they basically cleaned up. So people are looking, not desperately, but they're looking more towards things that are not related to our institutions than they have in the past. But when we're sitting, if I'm sitting down with the CEO right now, which I do all the time, it's my job. Okay. And the three things I'm focusing on are, what is the plans for the company? What are you doing to develop the next generation? And what are your plans?
Personally, yeah.
Okay. Succession. Okay. And what I'm getting back is, I'm not sure. I'm very reluctant to make decisions right now. I'm getting to the point where I'm sick of hearing that. Not sick of hearing
On
it,
all
but
three levels, at every level, there's a I'm not ready. I don't know
well,
which.
you could, the easier one to answer would be, where are you in terms of succession?
Yeah.
Okay, because they've already been thinking about it. This is by no means something that they just began thinking about when I asked the
Yeah.
question.
Yeah.
Okay. And what used to be some degree of precision in terms of dates and who was going to take their place, And how the what was their role going to be and what they were going to do after they left. Everything's back on the table. It's funny, David. I was flying back from a speech in Florida last week, okay? And I had had the occasion to spend time with my brother and sister-in-law, who he just retired. You know, he worked like a dog and a really, really very successful sales and marketing guy. And what, you know, I was looking at was the shock of the people that I was giving the speech to. Okay, because the questions that were coming at me were along the lines of, do you have any answers? Because we don't. Okay, and relating that back to the conversations I was having with my brother, and my brother's reaction, which by the way, I think is the appropriate one, is right now is not a good time to make definitive plans. I'm just going to enjoy the moment that I don't have to go to work. I'll worry about the plans later. So indirectly, his desire for the commercial sabbatical, which is the appropriate one, is now coming on a decision-making sabbatical from the audience that I just left the day before.
Interesting. A decision-making sabbatical.
That's that, you know, I'm going to have to write that down. It'll show up in a blog eventually.
I think it's a great clip because I think we can generalize that now all through the U.S. population, from the farmers who have soy plants rotting in their fields to me, you know, as a in my 80s spending money that is set aside for my retirement, and not altogether sure if that money will be there before I pass away. And why I never doubted that. I mean, I'm realistic about money being in the market and all that. We're being conservative, but still, can should I, you know, do more fun things now? You know, that's what you're supposed to do when you're retired and single now as widower, you know, just, and I said, no, absolutely not. You know, a cruise is out of the picture for a lot of reasons, but that I get it, so it's I'm on thinking sabbatical about that, and I'm just day to day and
And you
spending
know, you
carefully.
we're absorbing the news on an ongoing basis. I'm going to use myself as an example. Okay, always dangerous, but to prove a point. July 4th weekend, I was out hiking. Okay, and when I hike, I always have a podcast going on. And the more strenuous the hike, the more likely it's going to be a conservative podcast. You know, and I'm saying that as a moderate Democrat living in a blue state. Okay, and so listening to this, they were talking about the Doge impact on the PEPFAR program that President Bush put together, whose God knows how many millions of lives that has saved. The River Blindness program that President Carter conceptualized through the Carter Center and worked with President Bush to get. Okay. The catastrophe of the human catastrophe that's associated with no longer funding those. So I'm listening to this. Okay. And I get back, and stupid me, I turn on the TV. And I'm looking at a $50 million wedding in Venice. Okay. And you know, the inherent inconsistency, okay, of it, just, you know, I found appalling. I was just offended. I was offended on both sides of this. Okay. And I said to my wife, you know, that she I expletive, you know, they'll spare you that again if they have you
No,
offended,
Tom's
shout again.
swearing
There
again.
you go. And she's saying, what's wrong? And I was saying, this just drives me nuts. Okay. And then she said, this is the quote. She says, well, what about these daily packages that arrive from Amazon? Okay. David, this close to saying, and this close. And I bit my tongue and I said, well, what about your Washington Post subscription? But I managed to pass that. But you know, we're all guilty of to some degree of hypocrisy. Okay.
Yeah.
And you know, there's, but at the same time, when it's becoming how we are perceived as hypocrites, or at best case, indecisive, okay, or even, if this is, never thought I would say this, in a best case scenario, just incompetent, then you know, it's going to be a tough road. I can see the word, you know, whole bunch of my colleagues that are like me, ex-military, FUBAR is something that goes back generations before us, but it does apply. It does apply.
What I'm always saying, okay, then what's the good news? Now I'm not going to ask that because I think yeah there will be someday there will be a resilience and there will be some kind of a response to all of this destruction. But
But it's not.
I'm thinking about that employee now, one of your E's. I'm thinking about a person now who is working on the front line. Maybe he's in the logistics side of the business and seeing fewer and fewer packages being shipped. And he's thinking, what the hell's going on? So he starts to pay more attention, and eventually what he sees is fewer packages out means fewer packages sold, means less money, means I'm screwed.
Or we're not going to be able to walk this back to any semblance of normalcy ever. Okay,
Yeah,
I
again,
don't.
we
I've.
got
I've
we better accept that, I guess.
yeah. I'm, you know. I mean, it's, you know, let me know when Elvis gets here if that's the way you're thinking. But the what I am saying is, we need to confront the behaviors that we don't like. Okay, that to me is, we show zero tolerance. We start showing zero tolerance for political assassinations, regardless of who's assassinated or attempted assassinations. Just the fact that it took place, that's reprehensible, and it needs to stop. Okay, the rhetoric that brought that about on both the left and right, that needs to stop. Shut up. You know, this is one of those things where you say, you know, don't start advocating for a solution when you are the problem.
Yeah.
And so the other part of this is, what I'm looking at is, I believe that the learning laboratories are going to be the governors. Okay, to bring some type of degree of rationality. I'm very admirable of the governor of Utah. Okay. Right from the get-go, he's trying to calm things down. Right from the get-go, he's saying, let's wait for the facts. Right from the get-go, he's saying, this has to stop. Okay. And that, you know, and he's a conservative Republican
Mormon.
Mormon. Okay. And, you know, and the thing is, I was driving in my car listening about the assassination, and I'm thinking to myself, good for him. You know, maybe we should all be thinking along those lines. Okay. And so what I'm looking at right now is, there's people out there that know what the right thing to do is, and we need to give them the platform to be able to articulate it. You know, I was giving a we in Massachusetts, we have town committees, and we have committees that come together by county, okay, for multiple towns. And there was a breakfast I was attending, and the topic was, how could Trump have won? And I was, and I finally lost it, you know, and just go, Trump won because we lost.
I with you. I'm
Yeah.
so sad about
And
that because there are 35 million or more registered Democrats that
well, and that was my thesis, was, you know,
didn't
I you know,
vote.
and I could, like, 'cause, you know, I kind of lost it, truthfully, David. I said, you know, I'm sick and tired of the whining here. You know, those constituencies that used to be vote Democratic, why aren't they now? Let's make sure that they're not going to make, you know, do it again. And let's start entertaining getting older people with good ideas and younger people with great ideas, and just keep moving forward. This, the concept you and I have talked about before, this over the horizon view. Okay, that you know, we need to work backwards from something that's better than we're experiencing now.
Tell me more about that. Work backwards.
I have an envisioned future for my clients. Okay, is that their companies are going to do well. They're going to do well as leaders, and the people who report to them are going to be given the opportunity to show what they can do.
Okay.
That's my working principle. Okay. Now, if that's my over the horizon view, what I want to do is come up with the tactics that make sure that those three things happen.
Yeah, I'm very clear, and I get some hope from hearing that.
Yeah, so the thing is on the geopolitical piece, including the economy, I think that we just need to take a breath, step back and say, okay, what's our envisioned future? Okay. And I don't want to hear manufacturing jobs coming back to the United States and all
Yeah.
this other stuff because that's happy talk to me.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
It's hypocrisy.
why did they leave in the first place?
Yeah. We know why.
Yeah. And so the thing that I keep coming back to is let's, for the love of God at this particular point, given everything that's going on and people getting killed, is just stop it. Just stop it.
I think that I'm generalizing from my own experience now, but all these months, one horrific thing done by the Trump so-called administration regime and Trump after another, and they pile on in one. And what my question in my gut is, who's trying to stop them there in Washington? In Congress, where we in the courts, including the Supreme Court. Now, screw politics for a minute. Look at what's in the law and what is right. Why can't those who are there on our behalf to execute the law and to do what's right stand up, like you've just said? But not just stand up and go, oh, please, please don't do that. But go public. I mean, go big or go home. As far as look, this is wrong. Now, there are several politicians. Bernie is my man. I mean, he's been right out there every moment, including a very similar to the governor of Utah statement about this has to stop. And but let's get the fact. So. I know I'm burbling now, but why can't they stop them, Tom?
I think it's well I, they will all the when I have discussions with my clients and friends, and I'm saying, well, why isn't the checks and balances system that we grew up with and had faith in working? They use the
Yeah.
word they refer to Liz Cheney.
Okay.
Okay, here's a woman who very conservative, basically a constitutionalist, saying that the peaceful transfer of power is one of our core principles, took incredible offense to January 6th, joined the commission, which did a really good job,
Yeah.
okay, in terms of investigation, okay, only to lose her leadership seat first and then her seat in Congress second. So what happens is, you get and nobody runs for Congress or Senate without an ego, David, and
Yeah.
and so what happens is they can't envision a future that's going to exist without them still being in that seat.
That's right.
So the best option for them is to shut up. As I understand it, this gentleman from Utah, who I was singing his praises now, was criticized by Steve Bannon as an embarrassment to the Republican Party for not declaring war.
The conscience of the Republican Party, Steve Bannon.
And President Trump took him to the woodshed too. Doesn't seem to have made an impact. He's still saying the right thing. To me, the right things. But
Yes.
I think that we can't ignore the fact that, well, let's put it this way. In the type of work that I do, where we do the research, you do the writing, and you do the clients, I can't ignore the feelings of unpredictability that people are trying to navigate. okay, as they make their decisions. So the decision-making sabbatical, see, I've got it, did write it down,
Oh, good.
is you know, it's a wake-up call. You know what, you know, the thing that's what's happening is also, David, the difference between, say, March and April with Liberation Day and now is the stock market is still with us. Okay. And
Yeah.
it's still reasonably stable. You know, people are there's not that feeling of, you know, having been punched in the gut, which we all did when we looked at a couple of days after Liberation Day saying, okay, well, I'm going to be working till I'm 120. And so the stock market, and it's not that I want to wish the stock market bad, but I think when the economic issues, when people start realizing that they are in fact paying more and why, okay, and the expectations that were set that by this incoming administration, the coalition of those, and all of a sudden being a friend versus an ally of other countries. So look what we did with South Korea. Okay, there
Oh,
had to have
God.
been a better, there had to have been a better way than sending ICE in to take all of these people into custody. And, you know, yeah, maybe there wasn't a law thing, okay, but maybe we should fix the immigration laws so we don't embarrass another country who's one of our biggest supporters and investors.
Yeah, that and when more of those events get out into the news streams and where people will listen,
Right.
it starts to make people think, wait a minute, this isn't, they're arresting legitimate people here on legitimate visas now because they're Korean, and maybe this whole white supremacy thing is true. Maybe the goal is to reduce the company's population, country's
Right.
population of people who aren't like us, the white people. Which is, it looks like it's happening,
Well, that's
and my friends who are not white, but are wonderful people and have lived here basically all their whole lives, are nervous. There are a lot of Americans who are Puerto Ricans living in my community up here, as you know. You've worked here in the Hartford area, and I heard through, two people talking about a good friend, a mutual friend who's Puerto Rican, that he now watches his back. He's very careful not to go out into public like he used to, and he was a somewhat of a local public figure. And why? Because he's been harassed and by people who are neighbors saying, "Hey, you're next." I mean, they're using the threat. So this is happening on the ground. There's not much we can say about it because that's sort of the way humans are to each
Well,
other,
this is
but it's going on.
let's go back to the over the horizon view here. Okay. This is there's a military model here is you never declare war on an enemy that's in the process of committing suicide. Okay. And that's the way it feels to me, well, on immigration. Okay. Because what's happening is we're hurting our own labor force. All
Oh,
right.
yeah.
Those people that we're sending, you know, the only place we haven't apparently thought of sending people right now is to get on one of Musk's spaceships and sent to Mars because they're going to countries now I've never even heard of. Okay. And the thing is that you're looking at a group of people that we need
They
that,
always have.
yeah, and they've been most of these people have been working very, very hard with zero expectations on Social Security, okay, paying taxes, which that they will never get a benefit from. And
Denied
what
health
you've got,
care.
yeah, and what if what you're looking at is a situation which is very short term. It's a political solution to a problem, yes, that does exist, without any strategic thinking associated with, is there a better way? You know, back in the day, Senator Kennedy from my home state and President Bush, too, okay, came up with what I thought was a very aggressive immigration plan, okay, that didn't pass the Senate. Now, these are two people who philosophically did not have a lot in common. And the sponsor of the immigration plan that came in from the senator from Oklahoma, by no means a shrinking liberal, and he and Bernie probably just passed each other in the hall, okay, came up with an immigration solution that the party said abandoned because they wanted to have immigration as part of their platform. So this goes back to the hypocrisy piece. And I think people are, truthfully, I'm running out of patience. You can't take a CEO of a very large company who's going to tolerate this decision-making sabbatical for very long.
Right.
Okay. And then they're just going to go, okay, I'm done. And
Well,
I think it.
that cadre of leaders in our country, CEOs, men and women CEOs, at every level, state, local, state, certainly the ones in the global companies. I'm saying, why don't the elected senators and congressmen stand up, as you say, but they're only elected and they see themselves temporary occupants of those seats and they just want to extend it. But to me, the people who've risen through their industry and through their business to the point where they have the larger view and the responsibility to make decisions at the most strategic level, there's a lot of intelligence, there's a lot of expertise, there's a lot of money that they have. And if they organized in some way, and they probably would never do it by giving themselves a label, but if they could just activate their networks and say enough is enough, that in itself would give me some hope.
Well, there are companies that are benefiting from the Trump administration, some of the bigger
Yeah.
companies, particularly the tech ones. Okay. And the thing is that that's their job, is to run their companies and maximize the leverage wherever they can find it. So I can't be critical of them. But what I can state, based on what I'm hearing from the high potentials right up to the C-suite, is there is frustration associated with the FUBAR. There is anger emerging that this has gone way too far when we have political assassinations. Okay. And there's an issue of what you talked about in our, House Husbands of Connecticut and Massachusetts here. They're very smart enough to realize if we break trust, we being them, break trust with their shareholders, their customers, and their employees, they may never get it back. So I don't think they're
That's
going to sit on, I don't think they, I'm sorry, interrupted David. I don't think they're going to sit on the sidelines indefinitely.
No, that's it. I'll put a big circle around that in our conversation, Tom, because they're sitting in the pressure cooker right next to that little thing that goes ee! When the pressures to become too high. And in your sense of it, because you're in touch with all the networks of decision makers at that level, is it's they're in they're waiting now. They're sort of in a hiatus as far as doing anything now, but they're not deciding there's no action possible, and new actions possible will start to emerge, I hope. And then they can just say, look, at least for my company, you're not going to come in and grab another immigrant from my workforce. It's not going to happen. Look at Governor Pritzker in Illinois and in Chicago. He basically said, you're not going to bring troops into the city. Now they've kind of inched up there. They're trying. And he basically put out the facts. Here's my crime levels. Here's my murders level. All the things that Trump is saying. Oh, there's people are dying in the streets. Now, people haven't. I have a very close friend who lives in Chicago. She's gone out to these big entertainments they have in their parks at night. She's, she's a widow. She's not scared. I mean, it's completely incongruous to the claims that are being made to push military into our cities, which is, by the way, I don't even know. It's beyond illegal. Tom, you know the military better than I. It's inconceivable that they're doing it, but they're doing it. What's wrong with those generals? Why are they going along with putting their own troops out there then? Why don't they
Well,
say no?
First off, David, the National Guards are under the purview of the states.
Yeah.
Okay.
Aren't they putting some
So,
regular military out there too?
well, the only place that I've heard of the regular military is about 700 Marines in California and LA.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I'll
So,
retract my indignity.
no, there's no reason to retract it because most people don't understand the difference. Okay, I just happen to understand it. Okay, but I think that there's four things associated with your comment that I do want to embrace, and I just want to articulate here. There's hypocrisy. Don't say the crime is going up when under DOGE you took the money away from law enforcement in the first place. So that's one. Second is, don't say that everybody wants you to come in to help solve crime when the leaders of those states and cities are saying, no, thank you. Third is, don't put the National Guard people who are working soldiers, they have jobs. They're not active duty. They're not active duty patrolling, Ramstein Air Force Base. They're people who have jobs. Don't disrupt their life in order for you to look good politically. And the fourth is, truthfully, you're pushing these folks into a visibility situation for which they are not trained for. And of course, the criminals are going to stay home until they leave. So if you want to, in the meantime, they're suffering. I understand that there was a lot of protests within the California National Guard for the dumbness of that one. But at this particular point, yes, there is crime. There's crime. Lima, Peru, trust me on this. Okay, there's crime a lot of places. But we also had, that's why we have police. And let's make sure that they have the resources, number of people, the infrastructure, et cetera, to do their job. That's where the money should be invested, not having three National Guard people per patrolling the front of a Krispy Kreme in Washington.
Oh boy, Tom, I'm watching the clock, and we could do the rest of the day, and we still wouldn't find a moment when we couldn't think of something else to think about. Which is one of the many reasons I've enjoyed knowing you and believing in what you and your partners are doing as a private company. You're still advising. Even when people are saying, I don't know anymore, it's not like you say, well, do these three things. It's like, I don't know anymore. So you work with that phase of thinking rather than saying, here's the, just let's think through this together. Let's think it through.
Yeah, there's
And
it.
that's what I think it has to happen. The thinking has to come back in and engage with your scenario of those things that you want to see on the horizon and work back from there. I love that notion.
Well, I think that the other part of it is that there's three different styles of advisory. There's the business school professor, here, sit over there and I'll tell you what to do. Okay. Then
You picking
there's
on
the
me? Are you picking
yeah,
on
then
me?
there's yeah. Yeah, I was hoping you would jump to that defense. But the other one is the therapy now there. Or the one that we're evolving to and consciously is the Moonstruck, the movie where Cher slaps Nicolas Cage across the face, saying, snap out of it. That's what we're finding ourselves doing. Because what we're saying to our clients is, okay, tentative is better than paralysis. So snap out of it, do something.
Yes.
Okay. But
Yes.
if you're waiting for any degree of clarity here, sir, madam, God knows when that's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, Tom Casey, founder of the Discussion Partners Collaborative.
Way to go, David.
And I'm almost 83. The short-term memory dribbling out as we speak. But I'll never forget you and your colleague and how important you've been, even to some of my friends who've had your services. It's stabilizing in the midst of unimpressive
Yeah.
opportunities to stay stable. So just having someone across the table or across the Zoom screen who says, okay, snap out of it. We're in the same soup. We're slapping ourselves in the face too, but let's do it together and let's get going. Let's get there, wherever there is. So thank you, Tom, so much for this 45 minutes.
I appreciate it, David. It's good to see you again.
Thank you for listening to the Practice Podcast, Conversations Probing the Nature of Practice. If you'd like to hear more, go to Automatic, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or YouTube. And please consider purchasing our book on practice as a way of being at mylibrary.world. It's a digital book with lots of features that you do not see in a conventional book. So once again, thank you, and I look forward to you listening again.